Hi, our dear friends. Blessed day. Yes, today is Tuesday, and I promise you, this week we have a part three from Chit Chat Ex-Transgender Pastor Reverend Edmond Smith with Austin from US, America. Yes. Okay. And then I know you are eager to listen part three. I don't want to talk more. I just want to invite you to listen part three. Let's go.
How do you describe the area of your gender dysphoria at this point of time? You see, you mentioned a few things and I can totally resonate with what you're saying. Even though I'm an ex-transgender, I'm a married man with two young adult children, but I'm not a masculine man, and I'm not ashamed of it. You know, I'm just me, and I love pink is my favorite color now, you know, and things like that. I just spoke to a group of youth, like 60 of them. I just like traveled 2 hours away from where I spoke, and that's why I'm still in my uniform and all that. I told them this, you know, like, I talk about traits, you know, like, these are feminine traits. That does not make you female. That does not make you a woman as a man, because I like pink or I like sewing or whatsoever, you know. So in terms of your gender dysphoria, I would say in terms of my gender dysphoria, I resolve it completely. And I would define gender dysphoria as me not being happy with the person that God had created me to be, you know, which is male, which is man. But put aside the traits, I'm totally fine with the feminine traits that I have. So I would say I do not have any gender dysphoria. Would you say the same thing about yourself at this point of time?
Well, I do. I would say that I do have gender dysphoria, but it's not gender dysphoria about, like, the gender dysphoria I have is not like, oh, my body doesn't look feminine. It's like, oh my God, I altered my body to look feminine and God wanted me to be a man. So my gender dysphoria is like, I struggle. I cry about it. I mean, like, even before I detransitioned, I just realized, I don't know if I should have said that word, but you can bleep it. I don't, like, before I detransitioned, I struggled. I was like, oh, I made a mistake. You know, I made a mistake and I shouldn't have done this to myself. Maybe if I had kept my genitals, my story would be different. But, you know, that's really what my gender dysphoria is not so much like about my body. It's about like what I did to my body in the spirit of making it into some other thing, you know. And that's the thing about gender dysphoria. It is like a drug, you know, it creeps in with this little like, okay, I feel like I should be more feminine. And then so you start taking hormones, and then you're like, oh, my face doesn't feel good. Maybe I should get like a nose job. And then you get that, and then your jaw, and then it's your Adam's apple. And it becomes this thing where you hyper focus on these little things, like the size of your hands, the size of your feet, you know, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you keep being told by doctors and other people in the trans community that, well, just get facial feminization surgery, just get a boob job, just get bottom surgery, you know, and it'll solve all those problems. And each time you go and do those things, you do it, or I did it, with the spirit of thinking it was going to help me. But all it did was, like, it just made me realize there was nothing wrong with me to begin with, you know, and is heartbreaking. I wish that I had not been so took in by gender ideology, and I wish I hadn't believed. You know, I had a lot of friends that I looked up to in my transition, a lot of transgender, you know, trans identified males who had bottom surgery, and they were always saying how much happier they were. Their life was better. No doctor could even tell it wasn't natural, you know, like a bunch of just delusions. And over the course of time, I had 7 trans male to female friends commit suicide. Some of them had surgery, and I'll never know what their reason, you know, what the true reason why they chose that path. But I know specifically one of them, it was because of surgery. And, you know, I feel bad because we were close friends and I was one of the people who had surgery, and I lied by saying, like, yeah, there's problems with it, but it's like, I'm happier now when I wasn't, You know, it's like it was like the cost sunk fallacy, where you put so much into it, you have to keep it up, you know. But then when I started saying like to other trans people, like, I think I made a mistake, they turned on me. They said, well, you should have picked a better surgeon, or maybe you shouldn't have gone to Thailand, or maybe you should have, you know, da 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 da. And it's like, okay, maybe, but all of you people were encouraging me and gaslighting me the whole time to do this, saying it was going to be better. Oh my God. You know, even well-meaning straight people that find out that you're trans, they're like, well, have you had surgery? It's the first thing that they want to ask. And if they don't, if they're afraid to ask it, they want to ask it, you know? And eventually over time, that dysphoria snowballs and snowballs and snowballs mm-hmm. into believing this will be better. But it's a lie.
You know, I hear a lot of people who have gone through bottom surgery say the same thing. But of course, I've never had my bottom surgery, right? So what's
thank
mean
God.
When, thank God, hallelujah. I mentioned that earlier today with the young people. So my question to the statement that you made is that you said, I miss my penis. And let's talk about penis. Doesn't matter. You know, what does it mean, actually? I mean, what do you mean? I mean, I guess the audience will be wondering as well. When you say, when not just you, I've heard that over and over again, but they don't elaborate by what they mean by I miss my penis. What does that mean, actually? Can you explain to us?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I had it for 30 something years.
Okay.
I had dysphoria over it. Like, there's no doubt about
obviously.
That. Mm-hmm. I had tucked for so long that I had some issues. I had some pain, but the pain that I had with that would go away after not tucking for like a couple, like a day or two. You know, if I just like went natural, the pain would go away. However, post-operatively, I feel like I'm being pinched. I feel like the head of my penis is being pinched like 24/7. And it's been over 5 years, six years now since I had surgery. And I would think, I was told all of that stuff would go away and it would feel totally normal and totally natural and blah, blah, blah. But the other thing is, it's like that nobody wants to really admit that scrotum skin, you know, testicle skin, can never be turned inside out because it's not designed for that. It's designed to be an external skin, to sweat, you know, and things like that. And there's hair issues, you know, I struggle with. Like, I've been getting electrolysis. I'm going to have to get some more pretty soon. So was my dysphoria bad with my penis? Absolutely. Was it better than what I have now? Absolutely. I don't think, especially like, now that I hear trans people say, well, a woman can have it. And I'm like, well, if a woman can have a penis, why do you guys encourage everyone to cut, you know, and mutilate their bodies, you know? And I lost like 50 to maybe 70% of my sensation. Thank God I can still have an orgasm. I am so grateful for that. But it is still, there's pain, you know? It's like, if you're into new age stuff, if you're into like chakras or whatever, I don't know if I believe in them, but the genital area is the root chakra. It's like, you know, it's sacred. It's like literally what God created for us to have pleasure and to create children. And mine has been destroyed, you know, by surgery, by hormones. You know, my urethra was shortened, so I have issues going to the bathroom. You know, and all of that stuff was told that was like one in a million chance. And it's like, well, what are the odds that I would get all of the one in a million chances? And then you look at how these doctors like do these surgeries. It's an assembly line. You know, they see patients in the morning. They do a facial feminization surgery at lunch. They do a bottom surgery at night. You know, in Thailand, it's literally like a factory. It's just boom, 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 boom. And while I did get a high quality of care from the nurses, I had some sort of complication while on the operating table. They would never tell me what. They said I lost a lot of blood. I had to have 2 bags of blood transfused into me. They would never tell me why or what. And so, yeah, I don't really know. But I do know that I have a lot of issues, and I will spend, I mean, if I'm 41 years old, if I'm at my midlife crisis point, if I'm at my midlife, I got 40 years to deal with this. You know, hopefully the rapture happens and I get out of here before then. But but that's the lie that they're telling these young kids. They're telling these young kids it's no big deal. You know, it's just a simple surgery and nobody will be able to tell. No doctor can tell. Your boyfriend won't be able to tell. But I have never met a transgender woman who had bottom surgery that was 100%, you know, able to accommodate, you know, a partner's, you know, genitals. I've never known one that didn't have issues with smell or issues with discharge or, you know, it's just like, but I didn't know any of that before, you know, and the trans community. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I'm going to stop you a minute because you mentioned children. And I think you have, you're also, you know, speaking a lot about, you're speaking against children transitioning and all that. But before we go into that topic, we like to, I like to show the video that you sent us so that the audience can just have an overview of your little journey. So let's watch the video that you shared with us. Come on.
Sure.
I transitioned at 19 in the year 2002 under the Harry Benjamin Standards of Care in Savannah, Georgia. I've lived 20 plus years as a trans rights activist. I've gone to workshops, protests, conferences. I fit all the protocol. I presented as a young effeminate gay boy who was confused about my gender and my identity and homosexuality due to my extreme religious upbringing. And, you know, I want to talk about it. I want to hear what you guys have to say about your experiences in the trans like lifestyle and you know, and how we can put a stop to the things that are happening right now that are not good for people. Because if I transitioned at 19 and lived 20 plus years and still am confused about whether it was the solution, would not a child prepubescent about to go on puberty blockers also have those doubts? So let's talk about it. Follow me. I'll follow you. We'll be great friends. We can talk. And I hope you guys have a great day. Peace.
Hey, Austin, we're back. So let's talk about, what are you doing in regards to being against child transitioning and all that? Share with us a little bit. What are you up to there?
Well, I just want to say it's so crazy to watch that video because I feel like I don't that could be like my younger sister or something. You know, I feel like that was only eight or nine months ago, and it feels like an entirely different person. And I feel a lot of empathy because I know what I was going through right when I made that video, when I was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this right now, you know, and that urge to just like share it, because there are not a lot of males out there who detransition that share their stories. It's mostly young females. And that tells me who's really being preyed upon. But young males are definitely being preyed upon, just like tomboys are being eliminated by transgendering them. Mm-hmm. So are young sissies and young feminine boys. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that tomboys grow up to be beautiful women and feminine guys grow up to be beautiful men, you know, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. So around the time I made that, I had been getting, like I had been in the process of being vetted to join Gays Against Groomers. And so mm-hmm. I've been in them for probably eight months or so. And I started making some content and sharing it with Gays Against Groomers, and they reposted it to their platform, which was like, you know, 300,000 viewers, 300,000 plus people. But I started getting, I got a couple death threats from people that I used to be friends with. I got told by people I used to know to kill myself. These are trans people who are supposed to be like, you know, the most suicided people. They're telling me to kill myself so that I don't harm the community anymore. You know, things like that. So I stopped really making content and directly sharing it with Gays Against Groomers and took kind of like a back step to focus on talking about God, talking about, you know, the experience, like, because Gays Against Groomers is most, there are a lot of religious people in it, but it's mostly secular. And I don't want to, if I don't talk about God, I don't really want to make the content, you know? So, and the people that send me nasty messages on TikTok, thankfully the TikTok filters them out, you know, but, When people that I used to be friends with in the major city I lived in before I lived in Arizona found out about it, found out about what I was doing, found out about what I was saying, they came for me. But most of them wouldn't even talk to me. They would just talk about me. Mm. So I feel like, you know, at 40-ish, I've got a thick enough skin now. But an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old who's feeling like they want to detransition, they don't have that thick skin yet. And actually, I have a good friend who saw a video that I did with Shapeshifter, and I was talking about some stuff early on in my detransition. I was still presenting very femme. And the content that we were sharing, like me and Shape were talking about, this young person messaged me and said, like, hey, you know, your video made a big inspiration to me. And they came out saying they were detransitioning, and they got really nasty responses from people because they're young. Their video went viral, like million views. And the things that they were saying to this person, horrific, horrific. And I realized, okay, well, I have to speak up more now. I have to share, like, because they can say what they want about me, and I'm just going to let it be water off a duck's tail, roll off the back. But a young person doesn't have that experience. You know, a young person doesn't have that, like, ability to differentiate. You know, that's why the suicide rate is so high amongst the youngsters.
But I actually got to know you through that video. The first time I encountered you was with Shapeshifters.
With Shape. Okay.
And I've been speaking to Shape actually quite a little bit. Are you still in touch with Shape?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're still. Yeah. We tweet back and forth at each other, and he just did an amazing video with another person. Canceled conversations.
I think I saw that one.
I just actually finished the second episode of it last night. And, you know, very, very deep conversations are being had. And it does seem like algorithmically they're being, like, pushed down. There was actually a video Shape did that I was trying to find. I sent it to a friend of mine, and they were trying to find it, and they said, it's not in Shape's. Did Shape delete the video? And I was like, I clicked the link that I sent and it still worked, but it wasn't showing up on their most recent videos. And I was like, this wasn't even like a really problematic video. It was just, you know, real discussion. That whole Jubilee debacle with Blair and Blossom. I mean, that was crazy to show. Just how trans people treat other trans people that they disagree with, you know, and young people don't, when they're in like a clique or they're in a culture, they think they have to conform to everything. But that's, you know, that's how really dangerous things happen. That's how people make really bad decisions, is you're in a, what I call a yas lighting spin cycle. You know, everyone's just yassing you up the whole time. And then boom, you're not hearing anything from the outside. And, you know, one thing I will say is the only person that discouraged me from having bottom surgery was my dad. Everybody else in my life was either so supportive, like, wow, you're so brave. Or now they say, well, I didn't think it was the right solution, but I didn't say anything. And I'm like, why wouldn't you say something? Why wouldn't you, you know, you're like, you know, you're my blank. Why wouldn't you say, like, hey, I don't think this is right. Are you sure? None of them did that. Not a single one. They were always like, wow, what made you change your mind? You know, what made you decide to do it? That's so cool. And yeah, I am really mad at them. I do have a lot of anger towards them. Because just like now they won't dare speak to me directly. They wouldn't speak to me directly back then. You know, if they had doubts, they kept them to themselves. And that's not friendship. You know, that's...
Hey, Austin, you have a powerful, powerful voice. You really need to continue speaking and sharing your story. Especially, you know, really, really. Especially with those who are at the verge of thinking about bottom surgery. That's like, oh, you really got to speak up. You know, I pray that God will give you the grace and the strength and the determination to press in. This is a ministry, bro. This Amen. Is a ministry that you
it's yeah, building.
You have to do it. I tell you, you have to do it. And I stand with you and I'll be praying for you that you'll continue to tell your story, because people are at the verge of doing it, you know, and you went through it. You know, the pain, you know, the side effects and everything else. Wow. Your voice is truly needed in the body of Christ in the world today. Yeah. Just press in, you know, and do share with us. Do share with me, you know. I mean, I do not belong to a big, big church, but I belong to a community. How we can stand with you in whatever way, you know, in prayers, in whatever ways you think that we could stand with you, let us know and we will see what we can do for you. Yeah, Austin. Thank you. So your ministry is needed. I call it a ministry because
it is. I've been praying on that too. I feel like there is something, you know, and I'm very much looking forward to next year going to ministry school. I hope that they'll accept me. I feel like God is really telling me to go to this one particular place. I hope they accept.